Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, July 1st, 2015. President Kiir suspends two high-ranking officials in a scandal over missing funds.
Someone who has implicated them, someone who has forged the document and has implicated the executive director and the chief administrator. So the president did this for the interest of justice.
And South Sudan's foreign minister has no kind words for the UN mission in the country.
What civilian protection are they doing? You only find them in some small camps in some of the towns there. The rest of the country is being protected by the government.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's foreign minister has reacted angrily to the report released yesterday by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, in which government troops are accused of raping and killing civilians in Unity State. Barnaba Marielle Benjamin says the report, which is based on statements gathered from survivors and eyewitnesses to the alleged attacks, is biased and aimed at tainting the image of the government. He says UNMISS overstepped its peacekeeping mandate when it put together a report and should now consider reducing the number of peacekeepers it has in South Sudan. But Marielle says the government will investigate the report's allegations against the SPLA and will discipline anyone found to have committed crimes.
Yes, we have cases of soldiers that have been identified and punished. Some even dismissed from their duties. Those things don't come out. These human rights people, they go and ask two or three people here and there who sometimes may even exaggerate some of the reports they make out of their own personal or political interest. What we are saying is, yes, please, human rights groups, you are allowed to come in, make your report. If there is something, share it with the authority. We are accountable to our people. And you know, culture of our people that do not allow rape at all.
It looks like the SPLA has been in the news for wrong reasons. This is not the first time that this is happening. In Maridi, a whole town has been deserted by people because they are scared of the army. The army went there, beating people randomly and arresting them for no good reason.
Yes, there are cases that happened that way because there was an incident. The rebels came in and they killed the city official, the government official in the area. And this actually led to a confrontation between the rebels and the government. People cannot just run away from the army, no. But it is when there is a fighting in an area where the rebels come and attack government positions, then the civilians get caught in this crossfire that is going on, which is regrettable.
Don't you think the reason why some of these organizations are not sharing with you these reports is because they see the government condoning these activities? For instance, the case in Western Equatoria in Maridi is not about the killing of the executive director. It's about the people who are saying pastoralists must leave their lands because the cows eat their crops. And when they complain, they are shot. At some points, the SPLA came and sided with the pastoralists and shot at civilians, and civilians deserted the area, and nothing happened.
The government, through the Council of Ministers, the president himself gave orders. And those car owners, they should take away cows from those agricultural zones. And government has taken steps for that. And in fact, for your information, even the local member of parliament, who actually comes from area, Honorable Peter Bashir, had to be asked by the government to go and investigate and find out what was happening. And if you were to talk to him, he will tell you the steps he has taken, not only as a government representative, but an elected member of parliament from the area of Maridi. And you'll hear the proper stories, not those stories which are collaborated for ulterior motives by those human rights groups who would always want to throw mud on the government of the day because they have got their own agenda.
How would you assess the work of the United Nations mission in South Sudan since they came there?
I think the time has come where we will actually ask the UN that I think the number of their troops in our country is beyond the acceptable number. And I think it is time to reduce them because I think some of them are not doing what they're supposed to do.
The request for increasing the number was because they changed their mandate from peacekeeping to civilian protection because they are saying your government has failed to protect its own people.
That is not true either. The government's job is to protect its citizens. It is the mandate of any government. It is not for the United Nations to come and really determine whether we are protecting the civilians or not. They are there to work with us together to assist the government.
Perhaps one way of making them now listening to you is to discipline your soldiers.
That's why we say, why did they remove the capacity building, one of the mandates which was to be done by the United Nations mission in South Sudan? And we even said, give capacity to our soldiers, teach them human rights. And they are not doing that. They say it is not their mandate. So you begin to wonder, what are they then doing in our country?
The UN said they changed their mandate because your government is not able to protect its citizens. That's why they changed their mandate from peacekeeping to civilian protection.
No, what civilian protection are they doing? You only find them in some small camps in some of the towns there. The rest of the country is being protected by the government. We have over 10 states. And that's why we are saying you need the cooperation of the government. You need to work with the government.
That's South Sudan's Foreign Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin. He was speaking with me from the Tanzanian capital, Dar es Salaam, earlier today. President Salva Kiir has suspended two top officials over alleged embezzlement scandal. Mayen Wol Jong, the chief of staff in the president's office, and Yel Lol Kur, the executive director in Mr. Kiir's office, were suspended last week. They were accused of being part of a scam in which officials allegedly forged the president's signature and asked the central bank for money. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
The two aides were suspended a few weeks after a security officer, John Agau, allegedly forged Mr. Kiir's signature and used the presidential seal to request a payment of $1 million in cash from South Sudan's central bank. The Nation Mirror newspaper has reported that Agau gave investigators the names of other officials who are alleged to have also used their access privileges in Mr. Kiir's office to embezzle funds. President Kiir's spokesman, Ateny Wek Ateny, confirmed that Jong and Kor were suspended but stressed that they have not been accused of anything.
It is just to allow the investigation to take place. There is a proof. There is someone who has implicated them, someone who has forged the document and has implicated the executive director and the chief administrator. So the president did this for the interest of justice so that they are able to cooperate with the proof.
Mr. Kiir appointed Bol Wek and Rizik Dominic as acting chief of staff and acting executive director respectively in the president's office, Ateny says. Asked whether the ease with which money is stolen from the presidency indicates that it will be difficult for Mr. Kiir to fight high-level corruption, Ateny had this to say.
This is not corruption, as well as it is not true for anybody to make any conclusion, simply because this is something to be investigated. Anybody would get conclusion by saying that the office of the president has indicted in corruption, that person would be prejudging before the court of law decides. So that person can even be taken to court of law to answer the case.
This is not the first time Jong and Kor have been suspended from the president's office. In March 2013, Mr. Kiir ordered the same two officials, as well as Nomot Agoth Chithik, the then controller of accounts at the presidency, after money went missing after an alleged burglary. The door to the cash office was locked and intact after the so-called break-in. Agoth was eventually dismissed, but Jong and Kor were reinstated in their jobs. Edmond Yakani, the executive director of Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or SEPO, says last time the two men were allegedly involved in a corruption scandal, the public was left in the dark as to why they got off scot-free. This time around, he says, the findings of the investigation into the missing funds and who was involved must be made public.
Let justice prevail. In a certain way that if they are fined free, like last time, let us be informed of how they are fined free and then how why they are reinstated. Or if they are linked up with whatever has happened and then they are held accountable. So for me, if you are fighting corruption, if you are fighting malpractice, suspension and reinstatement is not enough. The law must take its course.
South Sudan has been dogged by cases of missing money since independence. In one of the biggest known cases of disappearing funds, $4 billion vanished from state coffers in 2012. Mr. Kir wrote to 75 government officials at the time, telling them that if they returned whatever money they took, they would not be prosecuted. $60 million were eventually returned, only 15% of what went missing. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
South Sudan's finance minister presented a 2015-2016 fiscal budget to the parliament this week. Lawmakers are expected to debate the proposed budget in the following weeks. Last Friday, the cabinet approved the budget, which is smaller than last year's. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Atorbe presented to Parliament at a proposed budget totaling 10.6 billion South Sudanese pounds, the equivalent of 3.7 billion US dollars. He describes the proposed spending as, quote, lean and primarily focused on keeping the government running. Atorbe says his ministry had expected to present a larger budget, but that the drop on oil revenues, which are the main source of government funding, required a smaller bottom line.
Security is our number one priority now, as we have got insurgency in the northern part of the country.
Last year's budget was passed at a figure of 11.8 billion South Sudanese pounds. For the coming fiscal year, about 45% of all government expenditures are allocated to the security, a sum of 4.6 billion South Sudanese pounds. Other key sectors saw their budget allocations reduced compared to last year. For example, health and infrastructure were allocated 452 million and 394 million pounds in the 2014-2015 fiscal year budget. The new figures stand at 317 million pounds for health and 186 million pounds for infrastructure. However, funding for education improved slightly. Last year's budget allotment was 622 million pounds. For 2015-2016, education gets 678 million pounds. Finance Minister Atorbe acknowledges the blow dealt by the heavy dependence on oil revenues, which were virtually derailed by the 18-month conflict.
We are going to increase work on our non-oil revenues. That's why we are going now to establish the South Sudan Revenue Authority, which will professionalize the collection of non-oil revenues, and we intend to increase it to a level that will enable us to make a real change.
Atorbe says partners like World Bank, African Development Bank, European Union, Norway, UK and US will be providing funding for some activities and sectors like education, conducting a national census and building an electric dam. However, some partner countries and organizations last year announced suspensions of their donations to South Sudan after government and rebels failed to restore peace following the outbreak of fighting in late 2013. Despite several efforts to improve collection of non-oil revenues and centralizing the collection of some key taxes that are supposed to be under the jurisdiction of the states, little has been accomplished in moving the economy away from dependence on oil. Last month, Petroleum Minister Stephen Diu announced a drop in oil production to about 168,000 barrels of oil per day, down from 250,000 daily barrels in 2013. Other observers believe the only way forward would be to secure loans to help the crippled economy get back on its feet. But in May, opposition leader Lam Akol claimed the government's loan debt stands at $10 billion U.S. dollars. Akol insisted that the government's economic crisis would make it impossible to secure any new loans. Many analysts agree with James Alich, a senior economist working with the Ebony Center for Strategic Studies, a Juba-based think tank. He says the latest budget sounds similar to the one presented last year and contains nothing new that would improve the quality of life for citizens.
Not many services are going to be delivered because now security takes precedence.
David Alami Poru, a lawmaker in the National Parliament representing Morobo County of Central Equatoria State, agrees with Alich.
The security has done nothing. There is insecurity all the night. You hear guns shooting, people are killed, and no one accounts for their deaths or whereabouts.
The budget is being referred to the two committees of legislature, finance and economy, for further scrutiny before further deliberations by lawmakers 2 weeks from now. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Philip Tonaleu contributed to this story. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The SPLM in opposition sets up youth leagues with South Sudanese living in the United States. What do they hope to accomplish? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could work in any profession, what would you choose to do?
I would be bringing peace among the people, coordinating people, and making a resolution to any conflict among the people.
Social science, I would choose that, because with social science you get to interact with different kind of people. It doesn't depend on class.
I would be a lawyer. Yeah, I think it's very interesting. They have a section where they help out people who can't afford them. Yeah, I think I would really love to do that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The SPLM in opposition has taken the unusual step of establishing a youth league in the United States. Represented in 15 U.S. states, their aim is to bring young South Sudanese together and train them eventually to be future leaders of the country. South Sudan in Focus reporter Ayen Bior has the story from Washington.
South Sudanese-American Matthew Dabol is an SPLM in opposition youth league liaison officer. He's lived in the northern part of the United States for the past 15 years, but thinks often about his hometown in Okobo. Dabol splits his time between his volunteer work with the South Sudanese Youth League and his career as a chemist at Ecolab Incorporated in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He says the youth he works with are inspired by the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan. Dabol says he hopes to get in touch with all SPLM and opposition youth leaders in the U.S.
They can try to organize themselves, and then I can go to every state personally, visit them and try to mobilize them and try to explain to them our vision, our goals of what we are trying to do. That we're not here to just raise money or whatever. We are actually here to build leadership, to teach ourselves what the party is about, to teach ourselves how to be leaders of tomorrow.
The U.S. SPLM in Opposition Youth League is only about 1 year old, but they are ambitious. Organizers like Dabol hope to one day have a youth chapter in every state to address the needs of South Sudan.
The youth were a bit inspired by what was happening in South Sudan, the gross human rights violations that took place in South Sudan.
SPLM in Opposition youth member Boutros Sila resides in Perry, Iowa, with his family. Boutros says he hopes to raise money for South Sudanese families who, through no fault of their own, continue to suffer.
The war has actually have infected a lot of people, and we wanted to make sure that this war will end it so we can live together like the way that we used to live. We wanted to forgive each other and move forward.
Dabol says for him, the goal is to ensure that every tribe and every young person in the diaspora is represented. He says he's met some bright young leaders in the diaspora who can come together to create real change for South Sudan.
My rally call is to make sure that if we have youth here that are interested in doing public service and being public servants, we can organize ourselves and teach ourselves what it means to be leaders of tomorrow.
Like many others, Dabol says the country will not attain peace unless its leaders are held responsible for the crisis they've caused in South Sudan.
I think peace needs to come with accountability. I think that when a leader, if you're only a leader and you fail, as a lot of our leaders have done, both sides, I would say, there has to be some sort of accountability. Peace for tomorrow will mean that we have leaders that want to leave a legacy for the country, that we have leaders that put the interests of the country first.
Dabol firmly believes the future leaders of South Sudan could very well be coming from the SPLM in Opposition Youth League in the United States. The key, he says, will be to give them the fundamental understanding of their heritage and promote cultural awareness among South Sudan's tribes. For VOA News, I'm Ayen Bior in Washington.
Just over a week, South Sudan will mark its fourth birthday. The anniversary celebrations will take place as fighting continues in areas of the country. Veterans of previous wars tell us how it feels to see the nation they risk their lives for plunge back into violence. Philip Tonaleu reports for VOA from Juba.
Joseph Angau was 22 when the Second Sudanese Civil War broke out in 1983. Now 55 years old and living in Nimili, Angau says he and his comrades were fighting for a new Sudan.
Despite that, there are so many hindrances, but I'm very optimistic and very hopeful that there will be a country called South Sudan. But we were not fighting for oppression, but we were fighting to liberate ourselves to be an independent country.
Angau says the southern fighters never lost sight of their goal to break away from the north and have a nation of their own. But the best of the nation that Angau sacrificed his youth for came at a huge price. 2.5 million people died in the 2 decades war, both in battle and because of hunger and disease. 4 million were displaced by the fighting. Fighting that broke out in Juba 18 months ago is still raging in parts of the country. Tens of thousands of people are thought to have died in the violence, although there is no official death toll. But humanitarian agencies do know that 2.5 million people have fled their homes in South Sudan because of the fighting. That pains veteran fighters like Angau.
But we hope and indeed that it was a devilish act and we will unite it as it has joined itself with the rejuvenation of Arusha.
Angau says he is still optimistic for the future, but he says the success of the young nation will depend on how equitable South Sudan's leaders prove to be.
South Sudan will be a very great country whereby the world will fear it. And whoever will be controller of this country will be very surprised how South Sudan become as a big nation in the world. We have a fresh minerals and everything. If we use them in a correct fashion, use them in a way that to develop the country, it will never take even 20 years. People will survive, and everyone might have gone to exile. When it's come after 10 years, you will see the Southern Sudan is another country.
Isaac Ayuen, who fought in the past Sudanese Civil War from 1955 to 1972, says he is also saddened to see the country he fought for and so many others died for, poised to mark its fourth anniversary in a state of war. He blames the current conflict in South Sudan on tribalism and corruption. He says neither has a place in South Sudan.
Why do you talk of tribals? Brothers fight and come back to the same table, eat, play, do what on the same at the same table. Those who use the word tribalism, I think you're wrong. It is a wrong concept. It's because we are corrupt. Corruption has become a disease and a religion. It is the one who you call tribalism.
Ayuen says, while he fought for autonomous Southern Sudan as a young man, his greatest wish now is to see a unified South Sudan, not one driven by violence that has dogged the country for the last 60 years. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
South Sudanese children studying in Australian schools say they are enjoying the quality education system and hospitality of their host country. I visited a community centre in the city of Victoria in Melbourne last month, and I spoke to several South Sudanese children about their country and its geography.
My name is Quay Nguyen.
How old are you?
I'm 13, turning 14.
What do you love about Australia?
It's a safer place than my home back then. My country.
Can you tell me the name of the president of South Sudan?
All I know is that he died.
Huh?
He died.
The president died?
Yeah.
When did he die?
I think last year. But I don't know the current one. My
name's Chal Arap, and I am 11 years old.
Can you remember where you come from in South Sudan?
I come from, in South Sudan. It's like near Juba, and I was born there in 2003 on August 23rd.
Any challenges that you would like to share with me? Any challenges at school?
Maths is a challenge for me because I'm not that good at maths.
You're not alone. My maths teacher was not my friend either. And what would you like to be in future?
A dancer or a singer, because I really like dancing and I really like singing.
Yeah, Christina Bushia.
And where are you from?
I'm from South Sudan.
Where in South Sudan?
Wau.
Do you know where Wau is? Which in which state?
Nuba.
Wau is in Nuba?
No. My mom's from Nuba and she's from
Anyway, let's not talk about geography. Let's talk about your school. What is the name of your school?
Adi South Primary School.
And what do you like about your school?
There's lots of respect and they help people so much. And they're not.
My name's Yakoch.
And where do you come from?
South Sudan.
Where in South Sudan?
Abia.
You come from Abia? Good. Which school are you in?
Simmons Catholic College.
What is your grade?
7.
What do you like about your school?
There's new subjects and Italian, which is my favorite.
You speak Italian?
A little bit.
Can you tell me something in Italian? How do you say hi in Italian?
Buongiorno.
Okay. And how do you say goodnight?
I still haven't learned that yet.
All right. Tell me more about ABA. What do you know about ABA?
I know that there's a lot of nature around there. There's a lot of nature and animals and people there. The language they speak is Tenka.
And is ABA part of Sudan or South Sudan?
South Sudan.
Who is the president of South Sudan?
Michael Kir.
Michael Kir?
I'm not sure. I think I forgot it. I forgot.
You forgot?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your life in Australia here. When you go to school, do you face any problem?
No. When I had my orientation day, I made friends already, and they were all in my class. So every day, I'm just with my friends.
And what do you like about Australia that makes it very, very unique from your country?
There's better resources than over in Sudan. And you can learn more things here, and the education's better.
Some of the voices of South Sudanese children who receive tutoring at the Sudanese-Australian Integrated Learning in Melbourne, Australia. They spoke to me early last month in Victoria. That's the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song South Sudan Independence by Dynamic. Ina makler kidaino asa ina ligo independence is inside dynamic wele talotuko de abuma ye belete na South Sudan ligo independence dunia kulugali ina nasigo wikalis ninjubale turiti na bada kuna woyoi Mashakin putu, belete na jedi. Independence, belete na ligo. Belete na ligo. Independence, belete na ligo. Belete na ligo. Independence, belete na ligo. South Sudan ligo. Independence, belete na ligo. Wanyamnyamnyam, gebila taki, gebila tani kulusawa. Motoro kanenzil Malinezil pipe Wo jo 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 Mina kulu wa kulu min sahan wahi Sipu tatani Leyal te inda de Peace of Sudan Wo ja ja Bele te na ligo Bele te na ligo Bele te na ligo Independence ligo Belletina Ligo, Belletina Ligo, Waya, ya, ya, ya. We have been listening to Dynamic with the song South Sudan Independence. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for joining us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Oh, no.